It's time for the Des Moines Register for Thursday, April 25. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. My name is Twyla Glenn, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Linda Lundgren. For the first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinion, sports, and lifestyle news. We'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's reading comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer Voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. Now let's take a look at the weather and headlines from today's Des Moines Register. According to AccuWeather, you can expect across the state today a breezy day with clouds and sun, pleasant in the north, winds southeast 12 to 25 miles per hour, periods of rain and a thunderstorm tonight. And a closer look at the forecast through the weekend for central Iowa. Today and tonight, you'll see a high of 68 and a low of 51, breezy with clouds and sun, winds southeast 12 to 25 miles per hour, periods of rain and a thunderstorm tonight. On Friday, a high of 66, a low of 63 with thunderstorms, some of which will be severe. On Saturday, it should be warmer with an afternoon thunderstorm, a high of 82 and a low of 62. On Sunday, thunderstorms and occasional showers with a high of 75 and a low of 48. Tracking precipitation in the 24 hours ending 4 p.m. Wednesday, we had zero precipitation. The month to date, we've had 1.35 inches against a normal of 3.02 inches. The year to date, we've had 6.06 inches against a normal of 7.67 inches. And last year, by this date, we had had 7.46 inches of precipitation. Sunrise today was at 6:19 a.m., sunset tonight, 8:06 p.m., moonrise today, 10:22 p.m., and moonset today, 6:55 a.m. Now turning to the front page of the Des Moines Register, the headlines read like this: Venue Viability. Area Des Moines, Des Moines area sports facilities like Grimes, are they worth the public dollars? And what's next in next year's $8.9 billion state budget? And the third story on the front page is headlined Jailed Developer Accused of Trying to Give Away Foreclosed Land. Now here with the first story is Linda.
Well, I'll read the story about the sports complex in Grimes called Grimesplex. When a prominent Iowa developer announced plans 4 years ago to build in Grimes what was dubbed the Midwest's largest privately developed youth sports facility, he predicted that 1.5 million visitors annually would descend on the fast-growing city of nearly 17,000, straddling Polk and Dallas counties. But as Grimesplex nears a grand opening and youth sports are in full swing, the optimistic projections surrounding the ambitious facility compete with a growing number of other options for young athletes. The city, 2 years ago, took over the now $31 million development of the complex, and projections of visitors were reduced to 1 million. That leaves the city gambling a pile of public money in a regional race to drive new economic activity through sports. Consider, West Des Moines in 2021 opened its all-season $60 million Mid-American energy company Recplex with two NHL-size ice rinks, a full-sized indoor soccer pitch, and four basketball courts. Ryan Penning, the city's park and recreation director, recently confirmed plans to add a third sheet of ice. Penning said the third rink will make room for events like the National Senior Games in 2025 and the Junior Olympic Games, which the city hosted last summer. The city will be looking for public-private financing to make it happen. The demand is there. I only think youth sports is going to continue to grow, he said. Then Waukee plans to welcome in 2025 the Kettlestone Central Sports Complex, billed as a national basketball destination with 12 full-sized indoor basketball courts and an outdoor court with stadium-style seating in a 160-acre development east of Grand Prairie Parkway. Hatched by developer Dixon Jensen, creator of All Iowa Attack, the statewide youth basketball program that nurtured Caitlin Clark, the facility is at the center of a $350 million private development that also includes more than 1,000 residential units and restaurants, bars, shops, and hotels. Then Norwalk has its new $30 million Greg Young Auto Sports Campus east of Highway 28, featuring turf fields and indoor courts as the centerpiece of the 70-acre, $300 million Norwalk Central development. And Johnston, last September, celebrated the groundbreaking for the Ignit Sports and Recreation Complex on the west side of Merle Hay Road, north of its interchange with Interstate 8035. With an indoor track, full-size indoor soccer field, fitness areas, 8 basketball volleyball courts, and outdoor fields, it is slated to open late this year and is projected, like Grimesplex, to draw 1 million visitors annually. Ames, Des Moines, Iowa City, Newton, and Urbandale also are among central Iowa cities ramping up sporting venues to compete for crowds, tournaments, hotel stays, and retail and restaurant dollars. Part of a larger 200-acre residential, hotel, and retail development, Grimesplex is projected to generate $11 million in direct spending in its first year and $16.1 million by its fifth, according to an economic impact study. The private investment became a public one in 2022 after developer Riza Kargazadeh's company gifted the 50-acre sports complex site and $12 million to the city of Grimes. He chose to do it after 2 years to focus more on the surrounding area, as the city is more of an expert in building parks and facilities, said Whitney Tucker, the city's communication manager. In taking over the now $31 million project, Grimes is betting the facility, which includes 12 soccer and 18 baseball fields, will create an explosion of economic activity in the heart of the city. But because it is now under city ownership, the new facility won't generate any new property taxes. Grimes also promised Kargazadeh's company $25 million in tax increment financing revenue over 15 years if he completes development surrounding Grimesplex by 2031. That means new property tax revenue generated by the surrounding development won't be accessible to the city for 13 more years. Across the country, developers, civic leaders, and economic development cheerleaders all have championed projects aimed at tapping into the $19 billion economy surrounding youth sports. But Iowa's tourism department hasn't found an accurate way to measure Iowa's sports tourism industry yet, and critics argue that too much building can lead to cannibalization, failed projections, and big losers, especially when public money is involved. Nick Reggio, a bank employee who runs the 600-member Dallas Center Grimes Youth Soccer Club, is among those who have questioned the public spending on Grimes Plex. He wonders who ultimately stands to benefit most from its construction: the city, Cargarzade, whether wealthier sports teams based outside Grimes, or local youth. Yes, he said, the CEO of Hope Development and Realty donated land and $12 million in 2022 so the city could finish what he started. But he said Cargarzade and his company also stand to benefit financially now that the tax-exempt complex is complete. The project, he said, also is nowhere near the largest facility of its kind in the Midwest and wound up costing much more than originally projected. They swore zero tax dollars would go toward it, and their original estimate was $19 to $21 million, he said, about two-thirds of what was actually spent. He questions whether the public investment in Grimes Plex was needed because the city already was growing rapidly without incentives. Reggio says he tried to sign up his club for practice space there, but Grimes Plex ultimately contracted with a direct competitor, Sporting Iowa, based in Des Moines. As often happens when new facilities are built, he said, Grimes Plex is drawing higher dollar teams while other clubs are forced out. He said his club continues to use beautifully maintained existing fields in Grimes, but members can't play on wet turf. The new facility, he said, has synthetic fields. I've tried to sit back and appreciate what we have, he said, but it's also like the new shiny toy you can't play with. With the gift from Cargarzade and a smattering of other funding, like a $50,000 community betterment grant from Polk County, the city says it's covered the $31 million cost of the Grimes Plex project. The city spent $5 million and bonded for another $14 million to get it done. Tucker stressed payments on the debt will be covered by revenue generated by the complex, not new taxes. The city's spending on Grimes Plex, which Grimes estimates to be worth $47 million, amounts to 41 cents on the dollar, Tucker said. Facilities of this level, built in other communities, including Mid-American Energy Recplex in West Des Moines and the Triumph Park in Waukee, have cost the taxpayers in those communities closer to 100 cents on the dollar, she said in a statement. Excuse me. This project brings immense value to our community at a fraction of the cost. With its first tournament at the end of March and weekend field practices that began this month, Grimes Plex is expected to be used mostly for local teams and parks and rec programs like peewee soccer, t-ball, youth hockey, and adult slow-pitch softball, Tucker said. It is a priority for the city of Grimes to offer park and recreation programs at Grimes Plex so all young athletes in our community of every ability have a chance to enjoy the complex, she said in a statement. It is a very special opportunity for these very young athletes to experience a state-of-the-art turf facility, and facilities of this caliber typically are not available for park and rec programs. Meanwhile, the park, she said, already is attracting businesses to the area, including a True by Hilton Hotel and restaurants that are set to start construction soon. City officials are confident that with an annual operating budget of less than $900,000, the new complex will benefit not only Grimes, but the whole Des Moines Metro, Tucker said. But as with many professional sports arenas, revenue projections for youth complexes around the country have fallen short. Fields and facilities also deteriorate and depreciate, costs seldom accounted for in rosy economic impact surveys. While Grimesplex undoubtedly will improve access to sporting amenities in one of the metro's most affluent communities, researchers have warned the ventures easily can become liabilities. In some locales, cities or counties have been forced to take over private youth sports developments that fell short of developers' projections. Such is the case currently in the Metro Kansas City suburb of Shawnee, Kansas, home to the Mid-America Sports Complex, now owned by Johnson County. Jeff Stewart, executive director of the county's Park and Rec District, said the county financed through 10 years of debt a $40 million upgrade this year of 24 baseball, softball fields, concessions, warm-up spaces, parking, and other amenities at Mid-America. It's just beautiful, and it's been very well received, he said. An upgrade at Mid-America West Sports Complex, also part of that project, is still in the design phase. The decision to upgrade both complexes came after a study identified major capital improvements needed at several of the county's outdoor sports facilities, Stewart said. But the county board overseeing the district has only half the funding needed to finance all the projects now identified in its strategic plan. The economic impact of sports facilities is very real and very important to attract local, regional, and national sports, Stewart said. But communities need to be particularly cautious about the need to sustain and upgrade those facilities for years to come. In the Indianapolis suburb of Westfield, home to a mega sports complex called Grand Park, deteriorating conditions and increased competition also forced public and private investors to eventually up their game. Grand Park in December announced a 40-year, $300 million public-private deal to upgrade the massive facility, including the hiring of a private management company to try to attract more large sporting and entertainment events. Penning, West Des Moines Parks and Rec director, acknowledged the difficulty when different locales constantly compete against one another with new sporting facilities. But he said West Des Moines has carved out a niche with hockey in a metro with few skating options, and that's paying off. The Recplex, he said, had 1 million visitors last year and generated $25.2 million in spending, according to numbers from the Greater Des Moines Partnership. Michael Hicks, a Ball State University professor and director of the school's Center for Business and Economic Research, asks if Grimesplex was projected to generate so much revenue, why Carr Garzade stepped away, or other private investors didn't step in. He also wonders why the city of Grimes had to step in with financing. Initially, Carr Garzade had said he would donate the complex at the corner of Highway 141 and East First Street to the city 10 years after its completion. Carr Garzade did not respond to an email seeking comment. Hicks said, "The fundamental question about youth sports complexes is whether their benefits are equal to or greater than the cost of the projects. The public benefit in this case would be the tax revenues received," he said. But he calculated total tax revenues received over 15 years to be only about $5.7 million. Taxpayers, including those who might like the amenities the facility offers, should face the fact that the city is subsidizing a large commercial activity at about 2.5 times the benefit the city will ever receive from it. The economic impact survey also didn't take into consideration how much of the spending would likely have occurred in the emerging taxing district without the project. "Generally, more than half of spending was happening anyway," Hicks said. "But if even $1 in $5 spent in this facility were going to be spent in the county anyway, this project wouldn't meet a benefit-cost ratio," according to its own studies. Tom Sands, who heads the Iowa Taxpayer Association, said cities need to exercise caution with such projects because Iowans also have a lot of concerns about high property taxes. "The main purpose of property taxes," he said, "is to pay for local services and schools, not sports complexes. And if they aren't profitable for a private business to run, then why should property taxpayers be on the hook?" he asked. Polk County Supervisor Matt McCoy said, "County leaders wrestle with communities' desire to create their own amenities while trying to build regional attractions. Increasingly," he said, "surveys show trails and recreational and sports opportunities top reasons why people love to live in central Iowa. Public and private sport associations are expanding what's available to youth far beyond options once available through programs like the YMCA," McCoy said. "At the end of the day, every community is going to try to outdo the other in terms of quality of life initiatives," McCoy said. "I think that spells the end for the YMCA model, but I think they benefit by keeping young families in their districts."
What's in next year's $8.9 billion state budget? Changes to special education funding, a pay bump for judges, and money for state park maintenance. Just a few of the items tucked into Iowa's $8.91 billion budget for the coming year. Iowa lawmakers passed the state budget just before adjourning the 2024 legislative session on April 20th and heading home for the year. The spending marks an increase of 4.2%, or $361 million, over last year's spending of $8.55 billion. Still, lawmakers budgeted far below what they could have. This year, the Republican-controlled legislature is spending just 79.8% of Iowa's $11.16 billion in available revenue, leaving $2.25 billion unspent. Iowa is projected to end the coming fiscal year with a $2.41 billion surplus, $929.9 million in reserve funds, and $3.76 billion in the state's taxpayer relief fund. By law, the state can spend up to 99% of ongoing revenue. This year's budget funds several notable items, including $10 million for a new Division of Special Education within the Iowa Department of Education that will assume oversight duties over special education services currently performed by the Iowa's education area education agencies. Over the course of negotiations, lawmakers proposed several prominent line items that did not make it into the final budget. Left by the wayside were a potential pay raise for lawmakers and statewide elected officials and changes to the state's District Judicial Nominations Commission that would have allowed the governor to appoint a majority of the commission's members. Governor Kim Reynolds has yet to sign the new budgets. She has the power to veto specific line items, including in budget bills. Here's a look at what's in the state budget. First, standing appropriations, including K-12 education funding. This is in the general fund, and it's for $4.61 billion, which is a $201.7 million increase. Here's what it funds. Senate File 2443 funds the state's annual standing appropriations, including $3.78 billion in state aid for K-12 public schools and $179.2 million for Iowa's public school education savings accounts. It includes cuts to the AEA budget. Lawmakers approved a $32.5 million cut to the budget for the state's area education agencies. That includes a $7.5 million cut required by law and $10 million to fund a new division of special education within the Iowa Department of Education. Lawmakers say they're using $14 million to raise pay for paraeducators and other non-salaried school staff. The final $1 million returns to the state's general funds. It includes paraeducator pay increases. The $14 million to raise pay for paraeducators and other non-salaried school staff was part of a deal struck in House File 2612, which overhauled the AEAs and raised teacher salaries. In this budget, there is money for Iowa's education savings account. The state plans to spend $179.2 million on education savings accounts, which families can use to pay private school costs. That's a $51.3 million increase over what the state is spending in the program this year. Families approved for accounts will receive $7,823 per student. The Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency expects that about 6,100 additional students to use education savings accounts in the coming year, which it predicts would bring the total enrollment in the program to 22,900 students. This budget also includes immigration enforcement. The budget also includes $2 million in new money for the Department of Public Education, Department of Public Safety, to fund 12 positions for what it calls to address the rise in illegal immigration and related criminal conduct, such as drug trafficking and human trafficking. A look at the Health and Human Services budget. This is in the general fund, and it amounts to $2.21 billion, which is an $88.6 million increase. Other funds besides the general fund have $468.5 million, which is a $360,000 increase. So the Health and Human Services budget funds House File 2698, which funds the Department of Health and Human Services and which includes the Department of Veteran Affairs. It funds Thrive Iowa. The budget allows HHS to spend up to $8 million on the Thrive Iowa new program that Reynolds announced in her Condition of the State will address that will use state navigators to refer Iowans to services from private providers, including churches and nonprofits. The program is modeled after HOPE Florida, a similar program that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis put in place. There are traveling nurse regulations. The bill places new regulations on staffing agencies for temporary nursing services. Agencies would be required to register with the Department of Inspections, Licenses, and Appeals, or face being banned from contracting with healthcare providers in Iowa. The department would be required to create a new system for the public to file complaints about temporary nursing staffers. Temporary staffing agencies would be required to maintain liability insurance coverage and meet all state licensing and certification requirements. They would be barred from using non-compete clauses for workers. Staffing agencies would be required to submit quarterly reports to the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services, listing the average amounts they charge to the health care providers they contract with and the average pay each type of temporary health care worker receives. It includes nursing home trainings. The state's Department of Inspections, Licensing, and Appeals is required to provide semi-annual training for nursing homes and nursing home inspectors, covering at least 3 of the 10 most common citations issued during the preceding year. Education is funded in the general fund at $1.02 billion, which is a $35.4 million increase, and other funds contain $34 million, which is no change. Senate File 2435 funds operations and staffing for Iowa's Department of Education, Department for the Blind, and the universities governed by the Board of Regents. The Division of Special Education. The budget allows $10 million to fund a new Division of Special Education created within the Iowa Department of Education as part of Reynolds' bill overhauling the AEAs. The division is authorized to hire up to 62 positions responsible for overseeing the special education services provided by the AEAs. Its funding will come from money previously allocated to the AEAs. Language in the budget prohibits the University of Iowa, Iowa State University, and the University of Northern Iowa from establishing, maintaining, or assigning employees for diversity, equity, and inclusion operations, as well as compelling or requiring DEI statements from anyone. The ban excludes positions solely focused on compliance with state and federal law. The language codifies existing directives that the Iowa Board of Regents adopted last fall. There is a 2.5% funding increase for public universities. The University of Iowa, Iowa State University, and the University of Northern Iowa see a 2.5% funding increase through this budget, about $12.3 million, bringing total state general fund funding for the Board of Regents to $573 million. The state's community colleges receive a 3% funding increase, or $7 million, bringing their total state general aid funding to $236 million. Open enrollment deadline for schools. Iowa parents will face a March 1 deadline to let schools know if they plan to open enroll their students in another school district. The deadline contains exceptions for good cause. The language in the budget reverses a law passed just 2 years ago that removed the deadline. And the law also addresses chronic student absences. The budget includes language setting new rules for schools governing when students must be considered chronically absent. It requires schools to meet with students and parents if a student has missed 15% of school days and to create an absenteeism prevention plan. Violating the terms of the plan would be considered a misdemeanor public offense, punishable by a fine, jail time, or community service. Turning now to the justice system budget, this is in the general fund at a rate of $693.3 million, which is a $24 million increase. Other funds in the justice system amount to $19.5 million, which represents no change. House File 2693 funds the Iowa Department of Corrections, the Department of Justice, the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, the Office of the State Public Defender, the Board of Parole, and the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. It includes higher salaries for starting corrections officers. The budget includes an $11.9 million increase for the Department of Corrections that will allow the department to hire new corrections officers at a starting salary of $24 per hour. The department will be required to send a report to lawmakers by December 15, detailing how the higher starting pay affects the overall salary scale for current state prison employees. It includes raises for court-appointed attorneys. Pay for court-appointed attorneys is going up by $3 an hour. That's the third year in a row that lawmakers have raised pay for indigent defense attorneys who represent low-income Iowans. The new pay rates will be $86 per hour for Class A felonies, $81 per hour for Class B felonies, and $76 per hour for all other cases. It also includes a boost for the Attorney General's office. Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd will receive a $2.8 million budget increase, allowing her office to hire six new full-time employees. The transportation budget in the general fund, there is zero, but other funds include a $453.1 million price tag, which is a $1.8 million decrease. Senate File 2422 funds the Department of Transportation and transportation-related infrastructure. The department is funded entirely through the state's Road Use Tax Fund and Primary Road Fund. In the area of infrastructure, again, the general fund has $0 in it. Other funds have $222.4 million. House File 2691 funds major maintenance repairs and improvements to infrastructure projects across the state, as well as renewable fuel infrastructure incentives, tourism efforts, and more. The money comes from Iowa's Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund and Technology Reinvestment Fund. The budget spends $6 million on maintenance of Iowa's state park system, including $1 million in one-time money for projects to increase accessibility to the parks for people with disabilities. Looking now at Iowa's judicial branch, the general fund has $220.2 million, which represents a $7.7 million increase. There are no other funds that fund the judicial branch. Senate File 2436 funds Iowa's judicial branch. It includes a pay bump for judges. Lawmakers included $2.4 million for a 5% pay increase for all judges and magistrates, fulfilling a request from Iowa Supreme Court Chief Justice Susan Christensen to compete with neighboring state salaries for judges. A lobbyist for the Iowa Judicial Branch told lawmakers Iowa will still be, what they said, dead last in judicial salaries compared to surrounding states, even with the raises. The budget also includes changes to Iowa's judicial pension system that will result in the state picking up a higher percentage of the contributions while lessening the amount judges need to put in. Turning now to agriculture and natural resource, the general fund contains $46 million, a $2.4 million increase. Other funds have $97.1 million, which represents a $646,000 increase. Senate File 2421 funds the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. If this includes the Food Assistance Pilot Program, $200,000 will go toward the launch of a pilot program that helps schools and food banks purchase locally sourced foods through the Choose Iowa initiative. It also includes state park maintenance. The budget spends $1 million on state park maintenance, repair, and refurbishment, and another $296,228 on improving state parks' accessibility for people with disabilities. It also includes aquifer mapping. The Iowa Geological Survey will receive $250,000 to map and assess the conditions of the state's underground aquifers, including measuring the volume of groundwater available in Iowa, how quickly it replenishes, and models for budgeting Iowa's water supply in the future. Looking next at administration and regulation, the general fund includes $71.6 million, which is a $1.1 million increase. Other funds fund administration and regulations to the tune of $67.1 million, which includes a $246,000 increase. Senate File 2433 funds several of Iowa's statewide elected offices. They include the governor, the state auditor, the secretary of state, and the state treasurer, plus their employees. And it funds several administrative and regulatory agencies, including the Department of Administrative Services, the Department of Inspections, Appeals, and Licensing, the Department of Management, the Department of Revenue, the Department of Insurance and Financial Services, the Iowa Utilities Board, the Iowa Public Information Board, the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board, and the Iowa Public Employees Retirement System, generally known as IPERS. It also includes election training for county officials. A $445,000 funding increase for Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate will fund a team to train county auditors and office staff in election administration and compliance. Pate had asked for the money to help train poll workers around the state. Another $50,000 will go toward creating a pilot program for the Secretary of State to identify ineligible voters. Iowa was one of a number of states last year that left the Electronic Registration Information Center, a multi-state organization aimed at helping states improve the accuracy of their voter rolls. And finally, in the area of economic development, the general fund has $42 million, which is a $184,000 increase, and other funds help to fund economic development with $34.4 million, which is no change. This fund, Senate File 2432, funds the Iowa Department of Economic Development, or the Iowa Economic Development Authority, as it's called, the Iowa Finance Authority, the Public Employment Relations Board, the Iowa Department of Workforce Development, and the Iowa Board of Regents. This area also includes automation in manufacturing. The budget sets out $2 million for the Iowa Manufacturing 4.0 program, which aims to implement automation technologies such as advanced robotics, augmented reality, and cybersecurity. And this roundup was created by Stephen Gruber Miller, who covers the Iowa State House and politics for the Register, along with Galen Barcarier, who covers politics for the Register. And they must have had to read a lot of budgets to get that information. Linda?
Now, our third story on the front page, jailed developer accused of trying to give away foreclosed land. And this is the Reader's watchdog, Lee Rude. Embattled Johnston developer Daniel Pettit is at the center of new allegations he tried to fraudulently give one of his investors a valuable West Des Moines development site that's entangled in foreclosure and several court cases as he sits behind bars in Polk County. Dallas County Recorder Renee Arnold confirmed this week there had been a request to the Polk County Sheriff's and County Attorney's offices to investigate who had signed off on a notarized quitclaim deed for a 10-acre parcel near the new Des Moines University campus. Pettit had planned to build an apartment complex there as part of the Village at Sugar Creek development. The transaction sought to give the property in Dallas County, just west of the Polk County line, to a limited liability corporation managed by Michael Metcalf, a Georgia investor. The quitclaim carried Pettit's signature and the notary stamp of Mike Rasak, an Ankeny real estate agent. Pettit previously signed a legal document filed in court, acknowledging he owes about $1.9 million to Rasak stemming from a failed legal cannabis business in the state of Nevada, court documents show. Dated April 14th, the quitclaim deed was filed at Arnold's office, but Pettit has been behind bars since January in Polk County for contempt of court, after what the judge in his case called empty promises and lack of candor as to his true financial position concerning his creditors. The Dallas County filing was discovered by investors concerned about the legal implications of Pettit's alleged criminal activities and his recent transfer of assets as he faces numerous civil lawsuits. Typically, attorneys, not notaries, are approved to visit inmates at county jails to carry out necessary legal matters. If the land was transferred fraudulently or someone faked Pettit's signature, the judge could void the deal, and those involved could face legal implications. Rasak and Metcalf could not be reached this week for comment, nor could Pettit, who isn't expected to be released until July. County attorney's officials in Polk County, where Pettit is in jail, and Dallas County, where the land is located, did not respond to requests for comment. Licensed until August 2023 as an insurance salesperson, but never as an investment advisor, Pettit, 43, took money from a wide mix of investors around the country, court documents show. A watchdog probe last December found judgments and debts totaling nearly $70 million against him and limited liability corporations in which he is involved. His failed deals affected not only the yet-to-be constructed projects and its investors, but contractors and family members. Adding to his legal problems, Pettit disappeared for a month at the end of last year after he was ordered to report to jail for 6 months, and he is at the center of a sweeping criminal investigation involving the FBI, Johnston police, and state authorities. As his troubles have escalated, business associates have accused him of fraud in transferring assets, like his Johnston home with a 9-hole golf course and heated pool, in spite of court battles over the properties and existing liens against them. Even while investors were seeking repayment last year, Pettit allegedly liquidated bank accounts, tried to write a check for $275,000 Michael Jordan jersey, and transferred around $100,000 from a personal account to a joint account with a woman in Nevada. He was jailed after he failed to deliver on promises he made to the court documents show. Authorities have been tight-lipped about their investigation, which includes fraud allegations by investors in the uncompleted Sugar Creek development. Pettit created a limited liability corporation in 2021 to develop student housing and commercial space north of the Des Moines University campus. The biggest lender to that corporation, called D.B. Boonville, was Lincoln Savings Bank. The bank loaned D.B. Boonville almost $10.3 million on a note that matured in October 2022. D.B. Boonville defaulted and Lincoln Savings foreclosed, court records show. Pettit also signed a promissory note to a Delaware limited liability corporation called DMU, Iowa Land LLC, for $5.5 million. Venture capitalist Lowell Kraft of Miami Beach managed that entity, records from Iowa's Secretary of State show. Kraft is executive chairman of a company called Trivergence LLC. That loan also went into default, court documents show. Lynn Hartman, a lawyer representing Lincoln Savings in the foreclosure, declined to answer questions about what oversight was in place to prevent Pettit from misusing the bank's funds. At this point, given that there is ongoing litigation, Lincoln Savings Bank will not be commenting, she wrote in an email. The property at 8180 Riverview Drive near South 81st Street and Boonville Road had received approval from the City of West Des Moines for a 6-building apartment complex. But after Pettit obtained the Lincoln Savings Bank loan, the project failed to materialize. Lincoln Savings won a $9.3 million civil judgment against Pettit, and the bank is scheduled to go to court against his corporation, D.B. Boonville, in August. The city and the project's insurer, meanwhile, have disagreed in court over who should be responsible for paying for site improvements that the city issued bonds to pay for. Pettit has no criminal record in Iowa, but he also is at the center of a case involving a burglary at his home that police have suggested in reports may have been staged.
And that concludes the front page stories from the Register. We'll move now to the Metro and Iowa section. And there is a picture here, says miles marked, and it shows Kyle Pop or Pape or Pape, I'm not sure how he pronounces his name, crossing the finish line in the Grand Blue Mile, which was staged in downtown Des Moines as part of the opening events of the Des Moines of the Drake Relays. I'm sure there will be more information about that when we get to sports later. First story here, Drake University Board of Trustees to vote on dropping some majors and minors. This is a story given transferred to the Register from the Iowa Capital Dispatch. As Drake University prepares to eliminate academic programs and faculty lines in hopes of balancing its budget, votes from faculty representatives have possibly narrowed the feel of what can be on the chopping block. The University Board of Trustees meets this week to vote on proposed program cuts. Drake University Provost Sue Mattison announced in early March that the programs encompassing 4% of the university's student body were recommended for elimination based on a program review launched in November. These eliminations, alongside the discontinuance of faculty lines, elimination of other positions, and a curriculum review, are part of cost-cutting measures across the university. The changes are expected to save more than $14 million over fiscal years 2025 and 2026 to fix a budget deficit. After the programs up for elimination were announced, faculty had until April 1 to provide evidence to show keeping their programs or faculty lines would benefit the university. Mattison, faculty senate deans, and committees reviewed the appeals before the recommendations went to the faculty senate vote on April 17. The majority voted against motions to eliminate some of the programs up for discontinuance, university spokesperson Ashton Hockman said in an email, including undergraduate majors in physics and astronomy and a rhetoric major and minor. Motions to eliminate the Masters of Accountancy and Public Administration were also struck down. The Senate, however, voted to eliminate the Religion major, East Asian Studies minor, and Evidence-Based Healthcare certificate. Some programs have been removed from consideration for elimination, including the Anthropology major and minor, Sociology major, Healthcare Administration major, and Religion minor. The next step in the process is for Drake President Marty Martin to bring these recommendations to the Board of Trustees meeting taking place this week. That's what Hockman said in the email. Once the board has reviewed and decided whether to approve the recommendations, Martin will share an update with the campus on April 29. Drake University's academic charter states that degree programs may be terminated by the concurrent agreement of the Faculty Senate, the President of the University, and the Board of Trustees. When asked whether there are talks to suspend the charter in order to move ahead with eliminating all the programs regardless of the Faculty Senate vote, and if certain programs are now safe in the wake of it, Hockman said she cannot guess what will be discussed at the board meeting. The president and the board have a responsibility to evaluate all paths forward to a balanced budget, but we can't speculate on what decisions will be made, Hochman said in the email. A document Madison provided Drake faculty and staff, obtained by the Iowa Capital Dispatch, lists the programs recommended for elimination and provides rationales supporting the choices. Each of the programs approved for elimination by the Faculty Senate has less than 10 students enrolled. Just 7 graduate students are seeking evidence-based health care certificates while pursuing master's degrees. The rationale stated and doing away with the program will free up manpower and financial resources totaling $5,400. Eliminating the religion major, which the rationale said enrolls 4 students, would save the university quite a bit more. Getting rid of one of the 2 faculty lines in the program and transferring the other to the law, politics, and society major, as well as other savings from eliminating the religion program, would save the university around $125,000. The East Asian Studies minor has just 3 students, according to the rationale, and certain classes required for the minor are not offered at the university, including history courses and Chinese and Korean language classes. The projected savings from doing away with the program are not stated in the document. Of all the programs the Faculty Senate voted against eliminating, the Master of Public Administration would potentially save the university the most money, more than $900,000, according to the rationale. More than half of those funds would come from the salary and benefits of 1 tenured and 2 continuous term faculty lines, and the rest would be the minimum amount saved from other expenses in the program. Eliminating the physics and astronomy majors would save the university more than $500,000, according to the rationale, and almost $225,000 coming from salary and benefits for 2 tenured faculty spots. Dropping the rhetoric major and minor would save the university a minimum of $165,000, the document said, and eliminating the Master of Accountancy program would save at least $30,000. Enrollment, graduation, and retention trends played a large part in the rationale for discontinuing the programs. Most of the programs up for elimination have shrinking or already small enrollments, and areas of study like physics and astronomy also have had low graduation rates. The number of student credit hours and majors in the Master of Public Administration and Accountancy programs also have dropped considerably over the years, the document stated. If the programs are eliminated, university staff and leaders have said there will be paths for enrolled students in order to finish their studies. Note that if any programs are ultimately eliminated, students enrolled in these programs will have a teach-out plan, meaning they will be able to complete their degrees on time and without delay, Hochman said via email.
I'll start this article. I possibly won't be able to finish it. Block on book ban law draws 23 state national groups filed documents with the court. Nearly 24 statewide and national organizations have filed documents in court to support groups who oppose an Iowa education law that bans books and restricts curriculum about gender identity and sexual orientation. 2 separate but overlapping federal lawsuits against the state and various public officials, one led by publisher Penguin Random House and authors whose books have been removed, the other led by the American Civil Liberties Union and LGBTQ advocacy group Iowa Safe Schools, are challenging Senate File 496, a sweeping education law signed by Governor Kim Reynolds last year. Among many other things, the law prohibits books that depict or describe sex acts from schools, except religious texts, and bars curriculum or instruction about gender identity and sexual orientation in younger grades. Federal District Court Judge Stephen Locher blocked enforcement of those 2 parts of the law in December. The 2 lawsuits remain pending in court, and the state of Iowa has appealed the judge's decision to block enforcement. In recent days, several statewide and national organizations have filed amicus briefs in appeals court to support upholding the district court injunction, which would keep the enforcement block in place while the lawsuits continue. An amicus brief allows an outside individual or group to offer information or an argument that could be relevant to the judge in a case. There is a whole list of groups who filed amicus briefs in support of the plaintiffs in one or both of the lawsuits, according to the online court records. And it goes on to list all of these groups, which would be somewhat confusing anyway, so we'll just end it there.